Welcome to What in God's Name. He is Chris Owen.
And she is Shayna Appel.
And we are the podcast taking on current issues from a theological and philosophical perspective. Chris, it's good to be back with you.
Oh my gosh, it's so good to see you, Shayna.
I was ill with bronchitis and not able to work with Chris for 2 weeks.
I wanted to let our listeners know what our production schedule is going to be. We are off next week, Easter week. We'll be back at the beginning of May, and the end of our first season of What in God's Name will be the beginning of June. We will have some occasional summer shows while at the same time preparing for season two. So, Shayna, before we get to talking about opioids and the conversation that we had with Dan Andrus.
Such a great conversation, Chris.
Thank you. I really enjoyed talking to Dan, as I enjoy talking to you.
Thank you, Chris.
Yes, indeed.
By the way, that's mutual.
Yeah.
Just saying.
Yeah. We wanted to spend a moment reflecting on the fire that occurred at Notre Dame Cathedral. So, Shayna, I have a philosophical quotation about fire that I put on our Instagram page. This fire in the cathedral reminded me to look at this magnificent book by Gaston Bachelard, who is French, ironically enough. And his book is called The Psychoanalysis of Fire.
Okay, first of all, Chris, I can't believe you have a book called The Psychoanalysis of Fire, and you have never shared that with me. But okay, better late than never. We're going to share something now.
There's a lot of things you're going to find out. Gaston says, if all that changes slowly may be explained by life, all that changes quickly is explained by fire.
Mm.
If all that changes slowly may be explained by life, all that changes quickly is explained by fire.
Wow, I would like to read the rest of that chapter.
As we do current events and culture from a philosophical and theological point of view, one theological perspective is that we get a more spacious sense of time if we take a step back from our culture, which is so driven by in the moment, now, now, now. A theological perspective on time is that things unfold centuries and centuries and eons. God has all the time in God's hands. And so this sense of, you know, just the historical span of this building, the roof goes up in flames, those timbers have been there for centuries.
It was just so heartbreaking. I was at work and I got a ping, my CNN breaking news ping came over my cell phone, and I picked it up and I literally, Chris, felt like I had been punched in the stomach.
I'm intrigued by your sense of a punch in the gut, and there's something in that. I would love to explore that for a moment.
Like, you know, big incidents will do, they will remind us of the architecture of our interdependence. You know, what hurts an entire body of people hurts us if we're oriented in that direction, you know, if we're not raging sociopaths. It is interesting that it happened on Holy Week and powerful, and it will call us to really dig deeply into the faith narrative that is at the forefront at this time of year, that the Jesus who was crucified is not the Christ of resurrection. The Jesus who appears to the disciples after Easter Sunday is not the same Jesus who walked the planet, yet still has impact. And we, as people of faith, have to trust that, even when the cathedral burns down, that God is with us. It suddenly gets very real. Maybe that was the punch in the gut. Thanks for teasing that out.
The other thought I had is this sense of impermanence. Again, another theological perspective that we get not just in Christianity, but in other religions. I think religion reminds us, or any kind of historical, big historical imagination will remind us of impermanence. All we have to do is be close observers of the world and reflect on our own condition. We're not here for very long. And so part of the tension of this is that Notre Dame, as this edifice, as this amazing building, it seems to have this aura of permanence, like it will just continue and endure through all time, and it won't.
It reminds me of what Dan said about, you know, resuscitation is temporary, resurrection is permanent.
Any more on that? Shall we pivot?
Let's pivot, because your interview with Dan was so amazing.
Thank you.
And I was riveted.
Yeah, thank you so much for that. Shana, I did a little research because I'm not necessarily a numbers guy, but I wanted to check out the numbers around opioid crisis. And the first thing I want to say about this is people talk about opioid crisis, and I say that phrase and it's like, crisis? Is that the... I'm always questioning words, like, is that the right word? And then I read something yesterday, James Fallows wrote an article, and he talked about the opioid disaster, and that seemed more apt.
Yeah, crisis feels small.
Yeah.
And when you look at the numbers, it is staggering.
So in 2017, 47,600 people died of opioid overdose.
Wow.
47,
nationwide,
47,000. This is nationwide, the United States. 47,600, but let's just say 47,000. And the Council of Foreign Relations did a little mathematics. 900 people per week. 900 people per week of opioid. This is not all drug overdose. The drug overdose deaths are even higher.
Yeah.
This is
just opioids.
900 people per week. What do you want to say about that?
It's almost, I wonder what would happen if, you know, every night on the news, we had the little shadow figures, you know, the way they used to do during the Vietnam War. How many soldiers were, for our listeners who are old enough to have been around in the Vietnam War, every night on the news, they would put up the numbers of Vietnamese dead and the numbers of Americans dead. It feels like it's almost time to resurrect that and put that number in front of people. Although I'm not sure, given the current situation, whether that would be helpful or if it would just pound people into a state of hopelessness. You and I have talked a little bit about this, but the blame goes much deeper than the drug companies. It goes much deeper than the opioid crisis. As Dan alluded to, you know, the issue of mental health being the underlying, the meta issue. And I think there's an issue that goes even deeper than that. You know, we are in a crisis of identity. Things that are happening right now at the highest levels of governance in our land are being driven in ways which seem foreign to us and don't at all seem to reflect who it is we understood ourselves to be as a nation. We don't separate children from families. That's not us. We don't put kids in cages. Like, what is that all about? And in the realm of post-traumatic stress work, one of the definitions of a traumatic event is an event which undermines our fundamental understanding that we have about the way the world is. I would argue that what's going on right now in the highest levels of leadership in our nation constitute a crisis of identity. And that is having impact, you know, all the way down the road. The fact that the disparity of income is what it is leaves people hopeless. So you have a traumatized nation. It's dealing with hopelessness, and nobody up at the highest levels of leadership in our nation is leading us, is speaking to our better angels, is encouraging us to reach for the best that we are. And in the absence of that, I think the lesser angels are, you know, come out of the box and they're running amok.
We need to take a quick break for this word as What in God's Name begins a funding campaign. Shana, you know what? We've been live now for 4 months.
Oh my God, it's hard to believe it.
And it's a good moment to invite our listeners to a deeper level of support and engagement. So for a limited time, now through Easter, we are asking for your financial support. When you support What in God's Name, Shana, you are supporting our core values, which are curiosity, depth, and...
Shine in the light. Friends, here's how to make a donation. Go to our website at www.whatingods.com. WHATINGODS.com. Don't go to What in God's Name because you'll come up with a bunch of cheesy videos and YouTubes. WhatingGods.com will take you to our website. Once you're there, you can link in to give either through Patreon. And if you need a tax deduction, link in through Filmmakers Collaborative. They're our fiscal sponsor. Let's make a difference for our culture, friends, and we thank you in advance for your support.
Thank you in advance for your generosity. And now back to our show. I love this idea of, and I'd like to explore this further with you, and let's see if I can articulate the idea. Inevitably, a human being goes into the world, or even a society. We have stories that we tell ourselves about how the world works, how the world should work, who we are as people. So as an individual, I have stories that I tell myself about who I am and where I came from and where I'm going. And as a, you're saying, I think, that as a society, we do the same thing, that there's a narrative.
A national lore.
A national lore. We have these narratives, both as individuals and as a culture. And then there is a triggering event, some kind of something happens, because reality is always bigger than how we can imagine it and then the stories we can tell ourselves about. That's a theological statement right mm-hmm. there, isn't it? That reality
Absolutely.
Is bigger than what we... It's also a philosophical statement about how we know and the limitations of human knowing. Reality is bigger than how we can conceive it. Something happens, and those stories that we tell ourselves get challenged, or there's new data that doesn't fit into how we see the world, how we understand ourselves. This is a By your definition, right? Mm-hmm. This is a traumatic.
Absolutely. It's a traumatic incident.
This is a traumatic incident. I would imagine that not everything that happens in the world that's beyond our comprehension of it is traumatic. But okay, so a traumatic event occurs and we are left adrift. The story that we're telling ourselves doesn't make sense of what has happened. And so we're in this, just this kind of
liminal
unbalanced
zone. It's a like, liminal zone,
where
right?
Where are we?
Yeah.
Like, what? My whole sense of meaning is upset. It's been overturned.
Yes.
Okay, so that's the kind of moment we're in, right? This is, I mean, as a country.
And when that moment is personal.
Yes.
When that moment is personal. So I experienced that around my brother's suicide because it really took the rug out from underneath the narrative I had about my family. I did not think my family was a unit in which that would happen. And so now I have to recast a narrative. The challenge is when it's happening on a national level, how do we begin to recast that narrative nationally? And, you know, we can take a smaller bite out of that. We got into this talking about, you know, the opioid pandemic. Do we start there? Recovery is a journey. Recovery is that journey of repasting together, a new narrative for sure.
Mm-hmm.
And what keeps us from acknowledging that, and the reason why I think so many people would just prefer to go to Palm Sunday service and then show up at Easter and avoid the whole Maundy Thursday and Good Friday thing, is that there is a crash and burn that has to happen. I mean, we always talk about the image of the phoenix rising from the ashes. We prefer to forget that before the phoenix rises from the ashes, she has to burst into flames and crumple to the ground in ash. So that's a hard moment, and I think it takes a great deal of faith.
That reminds me of what Dan was talking about true religion, and his sense of Christianity is taking us into the heart of the world's brokenness. And, you know, part of what you said is that in that critical moment of, I'll use the image of the phoenix, right, dissolved into ashes, and this critical moment, a different metaphor is the Christian Holy Week, which we're in, this Easter Saturday where we're between the death and before the resurrection, this time of things are not quite formed, into the heart of the brokenness, we have something to stand on. That's what the faith part is.
Yes.
That it's we feel like everything's up for grabs.
Right.
That is a true feeling, like we are totally lost, and that feels real, and yet we're trusting that we're somewhere.
And that is the crux, because when you lose the hope, which is what I think is happening, I think, you know, also the other challenge is, you know, that we are not a faithful country anymore, that attendance in churches and people's faith lives are not what they once were. So we don't have those common narratives to draw from. You know, the sort of idea that one can be spiritual without being religious, which I believe is absolutely true. The problem is if you're spiritual without the narrative, like the narrative is everything. The question is, does the narrative help you live a better life while you're here? Does the narrative help you stare down that which is absolutely terrifying, knowing someplace in your core that you can overcome this, that you will either overcome it or you will be eaten by the lion. And either way, even if you're eaten by the lion, God's got that too. So, you know, you go for it, right? For those of us in, you know, Judeo-Christian, Islamic traditions, those narratives exist. And we've listened to the stories for so long, you know, that they just become a part of the practice. But you said on Holy Saturday, we're in this liminal place where things are not quite formed. But on the first Holy Saturday, there wasn't even a hope that it was going to reform. You know, there was just ash. There was just the unimaginable had happened. There was just absolute devastation. Nowadays, because of the first Holy Saturday and Easter Sunday, because of that narrative, regardless of what actually happened, I don't care. We have the narrative. And those of us who have lived the narrative know by experience, we've experienced that the narrative, in fact, is true, that the one thing Passover and Easter have in common is that place of you got to hit the breakdown sometimes before you get to the breakthrough.
Shana, in response to what you just said, I wanted to draw your attention. A friend of mine sent me, and maybe you've already seen it, and maybe our listeners have seen this, and I recommend it if you haven't, but David Brooks in the New York Times, an opinion piece called Five Lies Our Culture Tells Us.
Ooh, this sounds good.
Five Lies Our Culture Tells Us. That sense of lies, put in theological language, the false gods. And
false
unmasking
prophet, sure,
the false gods.
Sure.
Career success is fulfilling.
Oh, yeah.
I can make myself happy. Life is an individual journey. This is the one I wanted to raise in with regards to what you just said. So the false god of our culture, one of the false gods of our culture, because there are many, is this hyper-individualism that we're living in. And I think that, you know, when we talk about narrative and the communal, the sense of a community drawn together by story and finding meaning together as a community, this sense of hyper-individualism fragments all of that. And I think that can lead to, eventually, to this hopelessness.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah. And another of the false gods, you have to find your own truth, which is, again, one of these, that's a different angle on the hyper-individualism that we
Well, and
in.
It leads to relativity.
And it does. You mentioned the phoenix, Shana, and that was an image that I had carried this week with, as we circle back to the beginning and close this show, thinking of the phoenix, the fire, the phoenix dissolving into ashes. You're so right to just point out that it's not just the phoenix rises, but it's also the phoenix is consumed and goes down. We think of our Holy Week that we are in as Christians following the Jesus way. It's a similar story of dissolution and being at a loss.
Yes.
And then on Easter, we lift up and celebrate, hey, okay, God has this.
Yeah, yeah.
God has this, and we are part of that, and we can rise.
But without Good Friday, there is no Easter Sunday.
Indeed. And of course, we see this, you know, I'm thinking of Sir James Frazer and the Golden Bough and his study of the pagan nature religions and this whole sense of springtime. We see it in nature as well. This sense of the long winter has come to an end here in the Northern Hemisphere.
Thanks be to God.
Thanks be to God. And we'd see the green blade just coming up out of something that has been brown and dead looking for so, so long. So we are on this journey, and this story of new life rising, man, that's where I stand.
That's, Chris, that's absolutely beautiful. Makes me think about all of our listeners out there who will be engaged in this Holy Week, or for those who are not necessarily Christian, maybe some who are Jewish, who will be celebrating the Passover Seder's around table with family and friends. For those pagans who are just celebrating the return of spring, to all of you who are journeying to a place of decomposition and ash, may you have the courage and the faith to do that, trusting that, like the phoenix, we will be lifted from that ash in some way, shape, or form. And may peace be with you.
And also with you.
He's Chris Owen.
She's Shayna Appel. Be curious.
Go deep.
And shine the light. We have an Instagram page curating some little philosophical tidbits. You can find our Instagram page at What in God's. We also, of course, have a Facebook page, What in God's Name. And we have a website,
whatingods.com.
WHATINGODS.
No apostrophe.
See you next time, Shayna.
See you next time, Chris.